Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. What a strange and sad few weeks it's been for the city of New York and for its relationship with the NYPD. Tensions have long been high between New York's finest and communities of color, but they got even higher following the death of Eric Garner, especially after a grand jury chose not to indict the officer who killed him. Dramatic protests filled the streets, and sometimes they insulted the police. Then, in December, things hit a breaking point. A crazed gunman from Baltimore shot and killed two NYPD officers as they sat in a squad car in Brooklyn. The city went on high alert. And then, after sensing a huge rift with Mayor Bill de Blasio, the NYPD began a remarkable work stoppage. The city's largest police union requested that officers only make arrests, quote, when absolutely necessary. So for roughly 2 weeks, arrests were cut by two-thirds, and smaller summonses like traffic and parking violations were virtually non-existent. And yet, despite concerns that without police oversight, the city would erupt into a plume of criminal activity, there was no crime wave. Last week, the work stoppage ended, and arrest rates returned, for better or worse, to normal. But questions remain about what the work stoppage meant and what it says about the role the NYPD plays in the city, as well as what future policing might look like. To help us make sense of it all, I'm joined in the studio by Matt Ford, who is the national editor of The Atlantic. His writing during the work stoppage posed important and challenging questions for all of us. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a simple question. What was the purpose of the NYPD work stoppage? What was the end game?
I don't really know if there was one. The slowdown appears to have been kind of not very well organized, not really well top down, almost an organic thing. I think that what it did reflect was kind of a broader disengagement or disaffection with the mayor's policies. You certainly see that in what the police union is saying, what cops on the job are saying and telling people in interviews. There's kind of a broader detachment from City Hall that is really being reflected now by this kind of refusal to participate in what many people consider ordinary police activity.
I think a lot of people appreciate the fact that, okay, so now there weren't going to be a lot of these unnecessary arrests. But at the same time, some people might be saying, wow, the NYPD actually is kind of like turning their back on saying, we're not going to look out for you guys. We're not going to look out for your safety. And that feels very confusing, I think, to a lot of people.
That's right. I think, you know, maybe what it is that there's kind of a disconnect between what the public understands the role of police to be and what the role of police actually ideally is or should be or how they perceive it to be. People see arrests as kind of the best benchmark of police activity, but in a way it kind of can be misleading. People make too many arrests, it'll look like crime is going up. People make too few arrests and criminals aren't being caught. It's really not a good barometer. You know, what always has been a better barometer is the level of public comfort. And if that's challenged, you know, either on good basis or bad, that can be a serious problem for community detentions. That can seriously, down the road, affect the NYPD's job. If people can't trust the NYPD to be there for when they need them, that's a serious issue for a police department.
There was a lot of attention brought to the fact that Mayor de Blasio had a conversation with his son, Dante, basically saying, you've got to be really careful when you're dealing with the NYPD. But I think, you know, if you ask any parent of a child of color, it's a conversation that they've had. But the NYPD did take it really personally.
Well, because the NYPD is fundamentally, you know, a collection of individuals. And none of them probably perceive themselves as being part of a larger problem. They all think, you know, they go to bed thinking, you know, I'm not somebody that, you know, African-American kids, Hispanic kids should fear. But at the same time, we see through statistical evidence, through the disproportionate number of stop and frisks that were conducted, we see through individual cases like Eric Garner and previous cases of police brutality that there is a kind of a valid perception among communities of color that there is something to worry about. That's kind of a bridge that has not really been crossed, or, you know, a divide that hasn't really been bridged.
I mean, the irony, of course, is that it really does reveal how unnecessary some of the NYPD's practices have been. So what in fact are some of the lessons of the stoppage in terms of the excessiveness of the NYPD and its level of arrests?
I think that's a great point. And the thing that we have to take into consideration with this is that on one hand, we haven't learned much. The slowdown was only for 2 weeks. It happened in the winter when crime is typically lower than in the summer. it's not a really good statistical window, and there are a lot of variables that can throw it off to see if there's a larger conclusion to be drawn here. But at the same time, I would assume, and I've assumed throughout all of this, that the NYPD would not actively risk public safety. You know, the question I posed before is, why haven't they been doing this all along? And I think that's where we're really going to be seeing the broader discussion here.
But the NYPD also has to justify the existence, its existence, frankly. It is, you know, in terms of numbers, could be considered the world's seventh largest army.
Right.
I mean, there are some who say, you know, the New York Police Department's industrial complex, right? I mean, they have to support this large institution. So in that sense, how does that play into these arrest numbers?
I think that would have been really interesting to see if it had gone on longer, to see if there would have eventually been a realization that we're not only not proving our point, but we're also disproving our kind of basis. The police unions are constantly saying that they need more officers, that they need more support, that they need more backing, they need more resources and material. And what they've proved is almost the opposite, that New York City can survive for 2 weeks with no major outbreaks of crime, no major breaches of public order, and everything went fine. New York is still standing despite arrests being cut 2/3.
So did the NYPD, in fact, play right into essentially proving what the protesters were asking for, a pullback as necessary?
I think that's absolutely right. You can imagine these protesters, to get a 2/3 cut in NYPD arrests, If that had achieved as a result of the marches directly, if they went and said, you know, because of this, we've heard you, we're cutting arrests by 2/3, that would be seen as a major victory. It would be one of the greatest victories for activists in criminal justice reform in a generation. But it didn't. It happened unintentionally as a side effect of a political gamesmanship, which kind of makes it all the more impressive that they can just almost turn it off like that, rather than having to be the sustained democratic discourse. It can just happen.
Thanks so much for all of your reporting on this, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Matt Ford is the national editor of The Atlantic. He joined me at Monitor Studios in Washington, D.C. We wanted to find out how people in some communities here in New York City felt about the police slowdown. Did they feel it helped or hurt, or did they even notice it at all? Our producer, Michael Simon Johnson, hit the streets of Washington Heights to talk to residents there.
Basically, what's going to happen now is the community is going to feel the brunt of it. They're going to have to make up them ticket quotas. As we stand here, like every other car, they stopping here on Amsterdam. So, you know, it's going to go back to the community is going to start having problems with the police again, and it's all because of the brass.
Sorry, what was your name again?
Ray Cintron.
Jose Torres. No, I didn't notice. I didn't notice anything. I kept seeing the sirens going around, them doing their job, stopping people, maybe for red light or broken light or whatever, you know. But to me, it seems like normal.
Quandell Coleman. There's not that many police officers in the train stations as it used to be. And I also noticed the shortage in police patrol, not only in cars, but also on foot. I haven't been seeing too many cops walk around since then either.
That's all it is. It's a business. New York City is a business. Since the Giuliani administration, they turned this into a business. And the lower class people, like us, the Hispanics and blacks, are the ones that receive the brunt of it.
Yeah.
Most of the things come towards us.
We're only going to start arresting people when it's absolutely necessary. So it's basically like telling on themselves, or saying without saying it, that, okay, previously before this happened, we pretty much been arresting people when it really wasn't necessary. So it's sort of like, kind of like abusing your power or your authority.
I'll put it this way. Have you seen the CPR? Courtesy, professionalism, and respect.
Yeah.
They need to implement that.
So you think they...
No, it's just a facade. That's all that is. Nowadays, they just there for the money, not for the career.
Neighborhoods are safe already. This ain't the 80s. This ain't the Wild West City no more. You know, it's not all that craziness no more.
Yeah.
Sometimes they make arrests just to make arrests. Sometimes they don't need to talk. They can talk to you. You understand? And play it down. But they got to bring in a quota of arrest. So they're going to arrest you for anything.
They say they don't have a quota.
No, they have a quota. Trust me. They have a quota. Everybody has a quota. I got 9 work orders to do. I got to do that. That's a quota. You got to give me 10 arrests a month. That's a quota.
Okay, from the monetary perspective, I feel like, okay, right there again, It's like they're telling on themselves. Crime pays, you know? So what you have to do is, in order to, because they cut down on ticketing or earning, you know, revenue from tickets, traffic tickets, they need to come up with another solution to make money instead of always trying to figure out how to exploit people to make money, you know? Figure out how to, you know, build something else that can help people and make money at the same time. Because if we don't, it's just gonna be a continuous vicious cycle where we're trying to exploit people.